As I said, I will be available for confessions and conferences immediately after the present conference, and I would say as long as I am needed. The Holy Father, in his apostolic exhortation on consecrated life, concentrates on certain areas in a given section, then goes on to another. I don't believe we began, or did we? Question 79. We ask, how have consecrated persons for community life, community life, community life? And notice, Christian community life among people in the world, the married, the single, society at large. We are told it all began with the first consecrated community of the apostles under the first superior, Jesus Christ. And this is a matter of history. Over the centuries, those living a consecrated life, going back to the monks, hermits in Africa in the second and third centuries, and the key is that it is not only the example that we are to give as dedicated religious to people in the world. It is also and mainly, as we keep repeating, that we are to be channels of God's grace for all the followers of Christ, and then with resounding emphasis, especially the Christian family. Only God knows the horrendous damage that has been done to family life, going back to Karl Marx in the 19th century. As I believe I've said on another occasion, every single premise of radical feminism is undiluted Marxism. Women are to get control of society away from the men who, according to Marx, had stolen that power from women way back when they invented, that's men, invented the idea of a family. To what does this fraternal charity especially give witness? The Holy Father tells us it especially witnesses to the power of God's grace to overcome the spontaneous Beauldian tendencies in human nature and in human society. We need to hear this. We are all naturally selfish. Only God's grace can overcome this spontaneous, built-in selfishness, which is the result of our inherited sinful nature. Is every form of consecrated life to be a witness to fraternal charity? And this refers, Holy Father points out, every form of consecrated life, whether religious institutes, secular institutes, whether apostolic active, as we call them, contemplative, even hermits, are to testify to the power of God's grace to unify through selfless charity human beings that are so spontaneously self-willed and therefore selfish. Over the years in working for the Holy See, I have found out, and have I now told many people, one of the hardest things in the world is to get Orthodox believing Catholics to cooperate. The enemies of Christ and His Church are phenomenally cooperative. And for us religious, as I've said before, of the 362 now women's religious communities in the United States, Rome's estimate is about 200 will be wiped out. And whatever else, with God's grace, you both learn in your minds and decide and resolve to do with your wills, in the name of God, work together with one another. And the bottom line of cooperative, even living, not to say activity, among religious is obedience to one's, first of all, constitutions, rule of life, and then superiors. Well, then how this needs to be said, superiors, they themselves had better be very deeply obedient to the Church's directives. I won't dwell on the subject. I will just mention it. Thank God for your pontifical status. In one diocese after another, those who are, whatever name they get, vicars, vicaresses, you name it, for religious communities of the diocese, the temptation widespread in our country is for those diocesan officials to control, dictate to the religious institutes in their diocese. without identifying the diocese. On the East Coast, a diocesan community, very Orthodox, doing good work. Bishop came one Saturday with his vicaress to speak to the sisters. Told them they would hold a chapter, and he spelled out all the norms for that chapter, in effect, secularizing that community. The bishop left late Saturday afternoon. I was immediately called up by the Mother General. "Father, can you come to a mother house? Tonight is a little late, first thing in the morning." She briefly explained what was going on. So I took the first flight in the morning and canceled other appointments to show up. I met with the Mother General and her council almost in midnight Sunday, telling them, "Look, my dear sisters, there is no one in this country who can save your community. Only the Holy See. I want you to tell me, all of you, that I'm to call up the bishop and see him first thing Monday morning. Ever tell you this?" It is worth repeating. Well, finally, the last of the members of the council, All right. "Who are we to dictate to the bishop?" So then I called up the bishop, saw him at his residence early Monday morning. "I've been authorized by the Council of the Sisters to tell you, write immediately to the Vatican and request pontifical status for this community. Otherwise, Your Excellency, the sisters told me to tell you, they will leave your diocese en masse." What else could he do? He agreed. In other words, community life about which we are speaking finally rests obedience, and not just blind obedience, but obedience to authority that is itself submissive to the highest authority of the Church, namely the Vicar of Christ. What admonition does the Holy Father give to chapters or similar meetings of institutes of consecrated life? Just a word. The key to an authentically God-given chapter is loyalty of the chapter delegates to the charism of the founder. How much I know too much. The bottom line is, we must first, as religious, know the charism, as we call it, of our founder, study it, live it, and then the community will not only survive, but thrive. What is the role of superiors? They are, needless to say, indispensable. As we know, part of the revolution in the Catholic Church today has been the decision of not a few once flourishing religious institutes to, in the best sense of the word, as they thought, not have one person in charge of the community. And for us Americans living in a democratic society, all I can tell you, it takes a lot of faith to see that God leads, no matter how large the community may be, ultimately by and through one superior. And the trouble, what books I could write that I will never will. The pressure, psychological, emotional. Pardon me for saying this, especially among women's communities. Pressure on the superior to conform to the ideas of even one individual. I don't know whether I should say this, but I think I ought to. Tears can be powerfully manipulating instruments. The next question follows logically. How has individualism affected consecrated life? Individualism, of course, means considering each individual as his or her own final arbiter, both of what is true and of what is good. I urge all of you to read the Holy Father's encyclical on Splendor of the Truth, which again the Holy See urged me to write a catechism, which has been widely sold. Each person's own mind is considered the final judge of what is true. And that is almost a description of the culture in the United States. Again, I ask, O Lord, should I say this? The missionaries of charity, whom I've been teaching now for 22 years, over 400 novices this year, total membership of about 4,500. But the most unstable vocations. Among the missionaries of charity are, I have to say it, from the United States. Independence, self-will, my own judgment are so built into our American culture that unless a person's faith is very deep, the idea of conforming, the very verb to conform, to say the rules or the regulations of the community are, as most American lawyers would say, in one court case they defend after another. Each of us is a free individual. Of course, there's only one answer. As we said at the beginning, and I'll keep repeating till we close this retreat, we have a free will only, not mainly, only to choose what is God's will. And this is where your community has been, I mean it, phenomenally blessed by God. That your rule of life, your spirituality, recognizes that when God became man, he instituted a church, and what a statement, within which church there are human beings. They can be very human, human beings. We have authority from God. Unless we are told to do something which is manifestly contrary to the will of God, we obey. How I like to read question 85. How important is the care of the elderly in consecrated life? The Holy Father's answer, I think, is somewhat unexpected. In other words, given, first of all, the dearth of vocations. I'm speaking of good religious institutes. The number of elderly people, just by mathematical proportion, increases. And the beauty is that the community helps, does everything it can to keep these elderly people, pardon me, on earth. All I can tell you is this. Only in heaven shall we know how many graces have been brought to religious institutes who respect the elderly members of their communities. Never say that you have retired. No human being should ever retire. And as we all know, the more a person who may be up in years and physically unable to do what, say, he or she had been able to do 20, 30, 40 years ago, it is part of God's all-wise providence. Now, the age level in countries like the United States is growing phenomenally. And what's the purpose? God's purpose is to enable those who live, as we say, a longer life, to spend more time, give more of their energy to doing the most important thing we have to do on earth. What is that? One monosyllable. To pray. The next question follows logically on the previous one. Is there a special rule for consecrated elderly persons today? And what else? Pope had no choice. He had to say, they are called to live out their vocation by persevering in prayer. I know of no community on earth, pardon me, whose members are praying too much. By the patient acceptance of their cross, and is all part of God's wonderful providence. And this, of course, refers to all levels and forms of consecrated life as spiritual directors, confessors, or mentors in prayer. I think I told you about 10 years ago, the number of people who wanted to make the 30-day spiritual exercises kept increasing. Did what I could, my correspondence and telephone, but it just got out of hand. So I wrote a book. And all I can tell you is the number of, well, allegedly retired priests. They were in the vanguard. Oh, how invaluable is their wisdom in guiding souls through the spiritual exercises. And there's one group of priests that I especially commend, not just to your prayers, but as far as you can, either yourselves or through your associates or oblates, it is to provide priestly work for those who have been, as the expression goes, retired from active duty. Nonsense. A How does the Holy Father exhort consecrated persons to strengthen their fraternal life? I've been in a religious community too many years, not know the price you have to pay to be a religious, a member of a community, and not just tolerate your fellow religious, but love them. In other words, we religious, strange language perhaps, are to be channels of grace, not only we as individuals, to individuals in the world, but we as communities, to communities of people in the world that are so tragically divided. We go on. What is shared responsibility? It is the collective cooperation of consecrated persons to work with one another. And this, as we all know, is easier said than done. We may be individually very talented. Someone who we obviously recognize, clearly, she is less gifted than I. What happens? She gets a position. And I, pardon me, I've given some task that is not commensurate with my obvious talents. Every one of these questions, I'm not exaggerating, I could and would happily spend not just one conference or one day, but a whole retreat on. Next question, borrowed directly from St. Ignatius. Thinking with the church. All the great founders of religious institutes in the history of the church have been devoted sons and daughters, and get the two adjectives, of the Roman Catholic Church. And just for the record, one norm for a founder or founders being great is the longevity. How long does that institute, I don't say just survive, but thrive? In other words, communities are to grow. I just touched on this, but as I've told your superiors, the handmaids of the precious blood, I don't hesitate saying, by God's will, are to grow. Go in numbers. I don't mean astronomical figures. And every means should be used to ensure and those who have vocations, and many more, have vocations than respond to the call of Christ. And the last part of the last sentence is crucial. These institutes, no matter what gifts their members may possess, it'll be only as effective in saving and sanctifying souls as the members of their communities are loyal to the Vicar of Christ. And I said in a previous conference, I never in my wildest nightmare expected to pay the price I've had to pay over the years for my loyalty to the Bishop of Rome. Now some quotations from the saints about their loyalty, and notice Roman Catholic Church. Saint Francis of Assisi, the Bishop of Rome, was the Lord Pope. Catherine of Siena, the sweet Christ on earth. Mother Teresa of Avila, I am a daughter of the Church. The Little Flower, as you know, this year is the 100th anniversary of her death. In the heart of the Church, my mother, our beloved. And the heart of the crisis of the Church in the Western world, and notoriously in the United States, is the widespread disloyalty to the Vicar of Christ. And I know I'm being recorded, and that among priests, and sadly, enough bishops to make it, when I keep repeating, the gravest crisis in the Church's history. And now, a key question. If all consecrated persons are to be loyal to the Church's teaching authority, and just for the record, the word magisterium means teaching authority, while all consecrated people are to be loyal to the Church's magisterium, who especially should be faithful. Those engaged in theological research, oh, sisters, be sure of the books you read. And an imprimatur is no guarantee of Catholic orthodoxy. Teachers at every level of education, publishers of books and periodicals. Didn't I tell you about the convention that I addressed? Today is what? Yesterday.
Wednesday.
Wednesday? Well, 2 weeks ago, last Saturday, about the convention that I spoke to of Catholic book publishers. Tell you about that? In Somerset, New Jersey. They asked for it, so I told them, how can you recognize an authentic Catholic writer or author? The first condition is that you yourself are authentically and unreservedly Catholic. How we need to read, reread the great masters of Christian, both faith and spirituality. In one Catholic seminary after another, I know, your university after another, systematically, authentically Catholic, Orthodox books are removed from the shelves. Catechists instructing children. Those instructing the youth and adults. And this is where I have to be as clear as I can. The media of social communication. They must be. That includes us religious, completely and unqualifyingly Catholic. I think I should say this. I'm confident it's the first time. Years ago, at least 20 years ago, I decided it was God's will that I never watch the media. I know the media too well. Now a term the Holy Father uses, spiritual communion. Notice, these are different institutes. How are they to be bounded in spiritual communion? Of course, by the practice of Christian charity. But in the last analysis, and you might think this is overdoing it, we are to love everyone. However, what a difference between how we practice this charity. Holy Father is speaking of the bonding and communion among different institutes. The bottom line is loyalty. Loyalty to the Vicar of Christ. Next question. Strange, in a way. How important is the, now the word, superdiocesan character of institutes of consecrated life? Now, this is what I could not tell you people not too many years ago, but I can, thank God, say it now. In other words, there are two kinds of religious institutes in the Catholic Church, as we all know. Those we call congregations, and those that over the centuries have been called religious orders. The Second Vatican Council did a dramatic thing in practically, I say practically, erasing the difference centuries old between what we called religious orders and congregations. Over the centuries, the Benedictines, the Franciscans, the Dominicans. Ignatius came along in the 16th century, and I think I should use the verb, he fought, of course, charitably, but he fought to get the Vicar of Christ, one after another, to recognize the Society of Jesus as a religious order. Vatican II, I repeat, practically erased the distinction provided, or what's the proviso? Provided a religious institute is of pontifical right and not under diocesan or the local bishop's authority. Since Vatican II, the two main differences between a religious order and a religious congregation were that for those belonging to a religious order, attempted marriage without papal dispensation made that marriage invalid. For those belonging to diocesan institutes, it would, of course, be wrong, illicit, sinful, but the marriage would be valid. Vatican II changed that. All pontifical communities attempt a marriage after final vows is invalid. Second distinctive feature under Vatican II, with his orders with no exception, in varying degrees, pronounced vows of poverty, which meant dispossession, not merely dependence, but I repeat, dispossession. And where a religious institute has its members be dispossessed of what they may have owned for their final vows, they give up the right to a personal, private ownership. And now, one, I repeat, pontifical institute after another without being canonically called a religious order. If its members dispossess themselves of what they either owned or had a legal right to, they then become, shall I say, partners with religious orders, even those some 1,500, 1,600 years old. We ask, what is of fundamental importance for consecrated persons? This is crucially important. Of fundamental importance is their cooperation with the members of the hierarchy for the organic development of diocesan pastoral life. In other words, even though a community like your own is called a pontifical community, bishops desperately need what we can provide them and their faithful in order that they, the bishops, may be able to govern their diocese and not have to be paying out mazuma for the kind of service which the dioceses need. When, under the guidance of the Holy See, we formed the Marian Catechists, part of the rule of life is nobody gets paid for their services, period. Oh, how vocal money can be. I know the bishops too well, how desperately they need the help of bona fide, authentic Catholic faithful. And whatever we can do to inspire these faithful to work for the church will be blessed by the Lord. One more before we close. An unusual question. Should the distinctive features of each institute develop? What are we asking? We are not asking whether the distinctive features of each community should be retained. That is assumed. But should these, although distinctive features, develop? Emphatically. In other words, take your own community. Father Gerald, I don't hesitate saying, was prophetic in his insights into the Catholic priesthood. And now, as I'm sure you know, in one diocese after another, in one religious institute of men after another, deep, deep, very deep problems, moral and doctrinal. And this is where I'm speaking from a lifetime experience. Well, Father Gerald bequeathed, especially to your community, first of all, needs to be understood. Then I'll repeat the verb used by the Holy Father, should develop. What do we mean? That understanding Father Gerald's spirituality is not just meant for the 50s or 60s. It was meant, and I say this with complete conviction, for the 21st century. How this is to be done is part of God's providence. Well, that it should be done, I have no doubt. In other words, the spirituality Father Gerald should be spread, and I mean this, throughout the Catholic world. Lord Jesus, we thank you for our call to live a consecrated life. We ask you to continue enlightening our minds so that we may grow not only spiritually, but may grow doctrinally in understanding our consecrated life as so desperately needed as we approach the 21st century of the Christian era. Amen. In the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit.